Texted in and said, I got 3 Oilers, 4 Blues, and 3 Lightning in my playoff pool. Yeah. So if my predictions come true, JR went dog, underdog. Frogger, yep, you'd be cashing checks, my friend. So good luck. Don't get me wrong. I want the Oilers to lose. But I see this.
You walked out of the studio.
You're doing reverse karma.
Yeah, you walked out of the studio at the end of that hour saying, boy, I made some terrible picks. My picks suck.
Yeah, hey, by the way, you guys know how bad I am predicting, right? And what the opposite, Alberto, the opposite of what I usually say is what happens as far as predicting games goes. Yeah. You know what level I wanted the Leafs to lose on Saturday? You know what I actually did?
I made a bet on the Lightning.
I actually signed up.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because as you may not be aware, you can actually legally bet now in Ontario. Yeah, I know. It's a new thing. Probably no one's heard of it.
Yeah. But there's only one app for that, right?
Exactly. Hard to find. But I found it. I went to signed up and made a $5 bet on the Leafs to win, knowing that I either was going to make $3.83 based on the money line, or I was going to lose. And I would be really a winner either way. So anybody that didn't want the Leafs to win, as a lot of people listening right now, Senator fans, right, should really be thanking me. I donated $5 to whatever gambling company that was on behalf of you.
When I went on and the MGM one, and I'm watching that, and first of all, that the commercial with Gretzky is incredible. The thing that grabbed me is I went on because I wanted to find out who did his surgery on his face.
He does look smooth in that one, doesn't he? That's some good airbrushing.
I'm like, okay, let me go over to TNT here. Then let me go back to the commercial. A little bit of tuckage going on there.
Yep.
But it is done super cool. And you have some fun with it. But gosh, Jerry, you go through all of them. And that is the fun part, I guess, of having no money on the line. To watch these series, and it really does to me. You get a pretty good indication right away in these game ones of, like, and this is, and I won't even fault him because I really believe Mika Zibanejad is trying as hard as he can. And I was actually real happy when he scored that tying goal. But life for him, we saw the best player in the world, Connor McDavid, pretty much a no-show with Jonathan Toews, right? He came into a matchup, and you can say all you want, oh, you know what, the great players get away. No, they don't, Jer. You match up sometimes. You go into a series. Mika Zibanejad knew when Sidney Crosby was in the series that he was pretty much a moot point. He comes out. What does Mika do? He has a 4-point game. I don't fault Mika. You just have to be realistic about these matchups in the playoffs sometimes don't go your way, and there's nothing you can do, you know? And so that's the neat part of the game one is I think Barkov is going to feel a whole lot better not having to face Kuznetsov. Now, how does Hedman handle him? It's just so neat, or even the confidence that you had during the regular season, JR, right? How you felt and how you see or perceive a team. It switches so quickly that it's so hard for any of us, and especially with the quality of the 8 teams that are left right now.
When I was here, essentially for the first half of the first round, I think one of my and many people's complaints was all the games were blowouts, right?
Yeah.
And wasn't it amazing that in the second half of, first of all, we had one sweep, but we had two series go 6 games, and the other 5 went 7 games. It ended up being really, really tight.
Yeah.
And the 7 games were all really competitive games. Yeah. Like there wasn't a blowout in any of them. Of course, the 2 on Sunday ended up going to overtime in game 7. I wonder if the round 2 we may end up seeing maybe a couple of the series go quick, five gamers.
Yeah.
And if you know, I think there's a chance for Carolina to make quick work of the Rangers. What would be, and I think you agree on that, what would be the other one you think potentially, if it's going to go quick, would be of the other 3 series?
Yeah, no, I guess I go to Colorado, you know, whether or not I'm respectful of how St. Louis is at, but I don't think they're as hard to play against. And on the back end, they're not as strong. And just as you go through their lineup, I still think Colorado, if they go next level, they've got one round under the belt here. I'll go with that. But, you know, also respectful, St. Louis is a real good hockey team. So that would be where, I guess, I watch Carolina, and it is just really, really a treat to watch how well coached they are. And, you know, so we'll see as the series starts.
Dennis writes, I want the Oilers to win. I wouldn't be surprised if Calgary sweeps them. That comes from from Dennis. So,
I'm not feeling that one.
Yeah, it would be interesting. And, again, they haven't played each other in 31 years. Yeah. Pretty much every single player that will take to the ice tomorrow night for game 1 of the Battle of Alberta wasn't even alive none of them, even if they were alive, would have a memory of that. It certainly will be a force field in terms of everybody that's in their sphere of influence will be talking about, ah, oh, it's the first Battle of Alberta in three decades. But you wonder if, and listen, when they played, and they played, I believe it was five times between 84 and 91, Edmonton won four of the five times. Of course, the one time Calgary won was the Steve Smith own goal in 86. You wonder if, or do you think that any of kind of Edmonton's dominance over Calgary 3.5 decades ago has any, in any way whatsoever, has any, not influence, but you know what I mean, comes into this series at all? It does in the fan bases, but does it for the players at all?
Absolutely not. It means nothing, Jared, but to the fan base, absolutely. And you go back to that feeling of Calgary, and you can almost look back and say, well, we still kind of won it because of luck. God, those Calgary teams, and we're not just talking about Edmonton. And hey, everybody hated Wayne Gretzky. It was easy to hate him at the time. All the whining and everything went on. Calgary had great hockey teams. And you kind of thought, like, if you were going to argue about a time about having 1 through 16 playoffs, that was it. So I think it's nothing. What's neat about that series, though, and I do think Florida and Tampa approach it to some extent as far as organizations, but when you go back to Montreal and Quebec, JR, it was different because the cities hated each other, right? And in Calgary and Edmonton, it's a legitimate rivalry. That's what makes Ottawa-Toronto the different, too, is that I can pick it up any time because we do have a bit of an inferiority complex on Toronto, and Toronto is extremely arrogant. And so that, to me, makes it a lot of fun. For the players, well, the factor that to me is always there is Matthew Tkachuk is going to do something very early on that has an opportunity. I find that fella so easy to dislike. Mm-hmm. And even though his brother is there, I could see his brother. If his brother's going to go into enemy territory, I could see a throwdown. but no, it doesn't mean anything. It's just fun that it's back. But it is cool when legitimately cities, you know, and I'm assuming Calgary sees itself as a white collar group, right? And Edmonton sees itself as a blue collar. That's what makes it fun. But as far as the players, oh, God, there's nothing other than this should be embraced as a second round as being a whole lot of fun because you got two pretty good hockey teams right now.
Garbage bag day in Toronto, so we'll be, you'll be seeing and hearing a lot about reactions from the Maple Leafs. This seems like a sort of a, I'll call it a late garbage bag day. I know Game 7 was Saturday. A lot of players like to get that over and done with like the next day. You know, it's like I just want to get out of Dodge at most 2 days. 3 days later seems, you know, a bit odd. Mm. You've been stewing now for a long time if you're a Maple Leaf player, and now you got to come in and face the media. And really, what are you going to say at this point, right? Where I don't think you're going to it's more, you know, I find garbage bag day, really, to be honest with you, I'm more interested in what the general manager has to say more than anything. Even the coach is kind of, we've heard from the coach in any NHL city a million times.
Oh, man, too much.
They're gonna say the same cliches. Yeah. It's the general manager who's got to lay out a blueprint for the future that I think most people are interested
in. Yeah, and that's the part, and again, it's fun having the conversations with yourself or Hammer or MJ. That's the part that's different for Toronto, JR. And I go back to probably the Kadri trade. You know, in Tampa Bay, and this is a credit to them, and you can argue about taxes or other things, but they continued to get their house in order. And even by the time they were swept with Columbus, they said, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to go out and trade for a couple of guys to place them in our salary cap that we can win cups. They continued through very good drafting, very good development, along with smart salary cap, to continue to evolve, right? It didn't feel like it was the end of it. You know, and Pittsburgh's had many variations, Washington. But the problem with Toronto was last year I felt this. This year I don't feel as bad because it's the upset, which is Tampa. But the issue is you're not going to bring back as good a team next year. And people can argue that up and down all you want, but you have not. You have failed as an organization that employs so many scouts. Their scouting on the amateur side has been terrible. Like, and you know, now you unfortunately have the situation with your first-round pick last year with the medical situation, but they have not put themselves in a position where you can feel like, okay, this was devastating, but it's part of the process. No, this team was there. This was the opportunity to take down Tampa Bay and to go on a long run. And that's what I find hard to sell going into next year of just stay the course. Well, you're not. Mikheyev's going to walk out the door at the very least. And then what do you do? And as far as shifting around the defense, by the time you allocate the money to Riley, to Muzzin, to Brody, I mean, who the heck else is, like, Labushkin was a hell of a pickup for what he was able to do. But I just don't see it, Jer. And that would be the hard part if I'm a Leafs fan, is I don't feel this is part of the process. This was the year, you know?
I'm gonna disagree with you on a couple of things. I think you're right overall. In terms of their ability to bring back an equal or better team, I agree on the surface that would be the case. But I've been I've been impressed with Dubas's ability to kind of find some gems and bring some players into the fold that are either under the radar players. Bunting is a great example.
A
2-year contract at essentially $1 million a year for a guy who ends up playing on your first line, and whether you agree you should be a Calder nominee at 26 years old or not, whatever. He played really well. He was a really good player for them. So there's something going on there as far as their ability to identify good players. And I'll also disagree with you a little bit on the amateur side. Because, I read organizational rankings from people, and a lot of people think, because Toronto's been in the playoffs a bunch of years, so they've been drafting in the 20s when they have, or they've been traded away a lot of their first-round picks. Their prospect list, according to people that look into this, is actually pretty good for a team that's drafted as low or not in the first round at all. Mm-hmm. They've got that Finnish defenseman, Niemelä, who was the top defenseman at the World Juniors a couple of years ago. Yeah. I think everybody thinks if Nick Robertson can get healthy, that he's a good player. Like they've got some players that can come in over the next 2 or 3 years that can kind of those players you need at the bottom of your roster that make next to nothing that can help supplement it. So I'm going to respectfully disagree a little bit. But Dubas is going to have to work his magic. Well, I for sure.
Yeah, and if that's the case, Jaron, again, I'm just a bit leery on some of the lists and things that are put out there. If I haven't watched a player, well, we'll find out pretty quickly because a lot of those guys will be traded. So what's their value? And okay, I agree. And Bunting, first of all, unbelievable. You also signed Nick Ritchie at the same time, and you go
Been
back.
Mistakes.
You go back to the Kadri trade that brought in Barry and Kerfoot to the things. And the issue is, JR, is whatever it is. Their window to win now is 2 years, and it's pretty much done. So, okay, maybe you got these players coming, but you got to do everything you possibly can to bring other players
in. This past year was, I think, their best chance, but I don't think it's their last chance.
No, but even at that, like you do not, as it sits right now, you don't have a capable goaltender to go anywhere with. So how do you solve that? And the window of, and if the prospects are there and they're that good, then you can trade them out. But then you got to go searching for the right contracts because you put such a squeeze on. Mm-hmm. And sure, I found Bunting and Cass and some of the other things. I don't disagree, but I just look at the overall and the initial squeeze of, and I wouldn't even fault the Tavares thing because at the time, for where they were at and symbolically getting someone to come like that, if you had done that along with Matthews is fine, but gotten Marner lower and still done a few other things there, I still think they were in a terrific window to end up winning. But just every little piece that's been off a little bit, I think there's been a regression of the roster each year. That's all. And the fines are great, but like I say, man, the Bunting is a one in 10 years, And as I say, you'll try some different things, and how will they work out? I think the big one always points to Nylander, but hey, we'll see.
Yeah, Matthew Nyes, by the way, is the other Leaf prospect that he drafted in the second round last year, the kid from University of Minnesota that everybody thinks is going to be a pretty good power forward. He decided to go back to school. And on your Nick Ritchie point, and you did talk about that, but you also brought up Lyubushkin, as somebody pointed out. Well, they traded Ritchie and got Lyubushkin back in that. So that's turning lemons into lemonade. So again, I give credit to Dubas. He has made some mistakes. Now Mrazek may end up being one that I won't call it his Waterloo, but that is going to be a hard one. Your ability to get out if you can from under that contract. And I think you can get out from any contract if you're willing to attach enough to it.
Yeah.
But the ability, they're going to need to get rid of Mrazek's contract. And I think the biggest decision for me that they have to make is going to be on William Nylander. You're not trading Auston Matthews. I would argue he's been the best player in the game this year.
Oh, God, yes.
Mitch Marner, I would keep Mitch Marner. I
that
think
duo
he's a
with Bunting,
player.
You've got a terrific first line.
And Tavares right now is not tradable.
No.
I don't think in any way whatsoever. So, if you want to find seven, and you could argue one way or the other on Nylander, all world talent. He may have as much talent as any of the as Marner or Matthews, but it's just too inconsistent. So and at $7 million, he gives you production that's probably worthy of more than that paycheck. So I think you'd be able to either, and if you wanted to, just basically delete the $7 million, get back you know, some good picks and prospects and allocate that $7 million into what, bringing back Jack Campbell. You know, like if you take that seven and then the four from Mrazek, if you can find a way to get rid of him, or that contract at least, and then if you decide to move from Justin Hall, all of a sudden you found $13 million,
yeah,
right?
Sure,
sure. And if you allocate five toward Jack Campbell, you can, again, you can work some magic. And Toronto can also, the way their financial might pays off as well is the way they structure contracts, right? In free agency or their ability to bring players in, right? You can front load, you know, with signing bonuses and stuff where players coming to the end of their contracts are paid less and are actually become easier to trade because they're making actually less cash at the end of their deals as well. So their ability to use their financial might, I think they have done a good job on the Shanna plan on that as well.
Yeah,
I'm talking way too positively about the
Leafs.
No,
it's just always, they're always healthy debates. And the Nylander one, this is where, and this is what you'd want, and although very successful, I would like to pull the reverse Heatley Hossa. I'd like to find your logic with Danny Heatley. I look past a lot of other things, but he's going to come in and score. With William Nylander, you know, people point out, well, first of all, for the value, JR, what do you have, 85 points this year? It's a lot of points, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that cash out the door to keep a goaltender. The trick is, and the problem I have with him, I don't care what he makes, and I don't care how talented he is. If you can't show up for the playoffs and turn on that next competitive gene, like we saw with Point and Kucherov and Marner and everything else, I don't have any time for you. But I'm also respectful that Johnny Tavares right now, if I load up on that first line, if Mikheyev did walk out the door and then you start to look at it, is it Kerfoot and something else? I mean, right now, you know, my point is Tavares needs help and he needs a Nylander. Well, what
Tavares
the hell
may need to move to the wing.
Well,
and then
yeah.
What are you doing at center?
Well, exactly. Right. And then, you know, so yeah, then it's just, you know, just trying to move it all around. And
now, you suggested last night on social media that you thought that Mikheyev, who's a UFA, and again, by my model, he's a $4 to $5 million player probably now.
Yeah.
That you said, you know what, the Sens should look at potentially signing him.
Yeah.
And I've said this, and I think you agree that I believe they need to find a skilled player to play with the Tim Stützle.
Yeah.
Would you say that Mikheyev is that so-called skilled player?
No, not at all. But what I'm looking at, JR, and I'm just having a bit of fun, I'm not sold on the whole Fiala thing because the skill that you match there and then the rest of it, I look at this right now and say, okay, if I was building the team, and this is just Sean Simpson's opinion, I would have Tkachuk with Norris, and I'd have Batherson with Stützle. And how do I fill in? And every time you talk to somebody, they just want more. I want Fiala. I want Giroux. I want everything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Tampa Bay Lightning were not built that way. They mix in players like Killorn and Palat and other things. When I look at a Mikheyev playing with Stützle and Batherson, I think it'd be a great fit. When I look at what would fit with Norris and Tkachuk.
Connor Brown.
Well, that or, you know, you get into Joseph, you get into. But I just think people keep talking about wanting to load up and load up. Hey, you know, a lot of the teams are good because they have multiple 20-goal scorers. They're big. Stay with the theme of doing this. And then also part of my logic, I'm not sold on Fiala. And by the time you hit your wagon to that contract, JR, you're pretty much made your bed.
He was not good in the playoffs this
year. No, and when I hear Dave Poulin, and Pooley scouted him, and Nashville got rid of him because he's soft, and I'm like, okay, now all of a sudden you come in. So if you went that path as well, I just think the glaring spot that you're really making a mega mistake if you're going to kind of turn the other way and say, let's go to next year with the defense we have. I just think you're asking for trouble, and that's where I would sign somebody like Mikheyev, look at my forward group, and, you know, it's not as sexy as people want it to be, but I'd really turn the assets and try to find that top four defenseman and, you know, a McDonough tile deal, and that's the problem. I don't have the one guy. I'm not even huge on Chychrun right now, but I just say, hey, let's do this. Let's solidify that back end, and then let's see where the chips fall with the rest of their group, and we haven't necessarily made our financial bet.
Yep. Yeah, and that's where, you know, if Claude Giroux is interested in coming to Ottawa, and we'll see. I think a lot of people are speculating there. No one really knows. Like, is he going to, I'm not saying he's going to take a hometown discount, but is he willing to do a short enough deal, you know, at some good dollars? Or is he going to want a retirement contract, right? Yeah. Is he going to want a 5-year deal at 34 years old?
Well, and I think
if
a great,
he does, yeah. I don't think that's something the Senators are going to look at.
No, and I also think it's a great opportunity, JR. Most of my focus when those games were on was watching Tampa and Toronto. I'm really excited to focus in and watch Tampa. and Florida and get a real good feel for Claude Giroux and see where he's at.
All right. Well, he had 7 points in the six games, so he's no Carter Verhaeghe, but had a decently effective. But, yeah, a lot of people looking forward to it. That's the first game of round two coming up tonight at 7. The Gong Show in the Glades. Got a few more have come in as well. We'll get to through the last half hour of the show. But we'll take a break, 9:36, when we come back. We'll set up tonight's first game ones of round two. A couple other off-the-page things I want to get to. And speaking of, boy, in 2017, if there was one defining moment when Ottawa went from this Cinderella team that maybe could go all the way to when it all changed, probably happened on this day 5 years ago. We'll relive that moment with you as well when we come back right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Yeah, it's not often that you go to Garbage Bag Day as an NHL player and you get asked about being robbed at gunpoint, but that'll be part of what Mitch Marner is going to be dealing with today as the Maple Leafs wrap up their season. If you missed the news, apparently last night he was carjacked in the parking lot of a movie theater in Etobicoke with a friend, and I guess three guys came up to him. Two of them had guns, didn't point it at him, but had visible guns, all wearing masks, and said, "We want your car." And Mitch Marner, according to Toronto Police, and the report said, "It's yours." And so off they went in his Range Rover. So he is physically unharmed, as you can imagine, if you would have gone through something like that. A little bit shaken, and I'm sure he'll be asked about that today.
Yeah.
So a weekend that didn't start very good on Saturday night, didn't, as it stretched into this week, did not continue any better for Mitch Marner.
No, and then there was a clip of what looked like kind of a rear ending in Toronto, and a bunch of guys hopping in, running around, and this is the middle of the day, so I guess they use the term brazen, just out in the
What clip is this? Same thing?
No, but there was a whole bunch of carjacks going on in Toronto yesterday.
Okay.
I didn't know about Mitch Marner until this morning, but yesterday there was another one that, like, right in the middle of an intersection, you know, guys rear-ending a car, and all of a sudden three guys grabbing another vehicle, and take
like this
it
was
off.
7:45 last night. Like, it's broad, like, it, relatively speaking, broad daylight.
This other
in
one
a movie
looked,
theater parking
well,
lot.
Well, this other one looked like it was about 5 o'clock. And as we talked about earlier, I mean, whatever the type of vehicle, not hard to find. Well, in Canada overall, but certainly in Toronto, Jer. I mean, hey, a lot of money there. Wouldn't be hard to track down some of these high-end vehicles. Mm. So just glad that he was smart and everyone's safe.
9:44. So 1 week from tonight, a little bit of Ottawa sports history will be made as the Ottawa Titans of the Frontier Baseball League will play their first home game. The Titans are beginning their season on the road, played in Joliet, Illinois this past weekend. They're on the road, in fact, tonight going to have to learn the names of the teams, but they remain in Illinois for a series of starting tonight. They're back home for their first home game next Tuesday. And if you'd like to be there for a little bit of Ottawa history, you got a pair of club seats to see that first ever game for the Titans to give away right now. So here's what you're going to do. We're going to do a question right here based on Ottawa's baseball history. You're going to text us the correct answer in the next 5 minutes along with your first and last name. You'll text us at 12-1200, standard messaging rates apply, and then Hammer will draw one name from among all the correct answers, and that person will win the pair of club seats to see the Titans in their home opener next Tuesday. Here's the question. The Ottawa Lynx won an International League Baseball Championship, the Governor's Cup, as it was called, in 1995. Which team did they defeat in the championship series? What team did the Lynx beat in the championship series in 1995? If you know it, you know it. If you don't, you could still look it up. But we'd rather you knew it. Text us the correct answer, your first and last name, to 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply, and you could be on your way to see the Ottawa Titans next Tuesday in their home opener at Ottawa's baseball park.
Yeah, let's go with that still.
Okay. They still have all the signage out, though, right? But it's not being called anything nowadays?
I don't think so. I think they took down the letters, but you can still see them. Okay.
The dirty shadows?
Exactly.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
And the Titans are taking on the Windy City Thunderbolts.
In the home opener or tonight?
No, tonight.
Tonight, Windy City?
Windy City. On Sunday, it was the Joliet Slammers.
Yeah, and we nailed that one. Now, Thunderbolts, guys, and Hammer could probably lay a little bit more JR. If we're thinking Thunderbolts, what movie are we thinking of?
Are we thinking Ted?
Exactly. Nice job by Hall.
Good job.
Wow.
Because they sang that song to help them them keep safe during thunderstorms.
Exactly. I didn't want to bring you that low, JR. I didn't think you'd be down on our level. So.
Good call by you.
Yeah.
Very good call by you. Some more suggestions for the Florida-Tampa series because we decided we didn't like Battle of Florida because we got a Battle of Alberta.
Yeah.
Ken's Gong Show on the Glades certainly got two enthusiastic thumbs up from Mike Johnson.
Yeah.
Here's some, like Cougar Cup came in.
Yeah.
The I-75 Onslaught, that's from Phil in Orleans.
But that's kind of one way, though, isn't it?
It's down the east side.
Yeah, it's not really a battle, though, then.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'll just run through the rest here.
Yeah.
A few of them. Gator Games, Sunscreen Series, the Gladiator Series, Snowbird Showdown, Del Boca Vista Phase 1 versus Del Boca Vista Phase 2, or Battle of the Del Boca Vistas.
Yes.
Seinfeld. Let's see here. The Bengay Brouhaha.
Oh, okay.
That's from Mike. Yeah. And the Snowbird State Squabble. That's a bit of a mouthful. That comes from Paul. So appreciated everybody and a bunch we didn't get to as well. For that. Okay. So
we could mix in maybe a DeSantos Trump and a Merlago.
Merlago
Cup.
Correct.
Mar-Lago, whatever it is.
I'm going to apologize in advance. Who was it that tweeted at us earlier this morning and talked about that? Ah, God. I'll find it in
a
second. We mentioned that today, on this day 31 years ago, Mary Lemieux scored that iconic end-to-ender where you're inside out on Sean Chambers of the Minnesota North Stars and around John Casey, and the great call by Bob Cole. I would say I guess the in terms of NHL goals and the Canada Cup goal to beat the Soviets in 87, those are Mario's signature goals that we'll always remember.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to think, like, if you went through the greatest players of the last 30, 40 years and the icon, and you can attribute a goal to all of them. Like, for me, I go through it, right? Sidney Crosby, right? The golden goal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
that
one.
Wayne Gretzky, for me, is the slap shot from the left faceoff circle, shorthanded in overtime over Mike Vernon's shoulder to beat Calgary. I don't know if that won the series, but it won a game.
No, I think it won the series.
Did it?
And I just think of that. First of all, the wind up to the ceiling. And everybody, including Vernie, knows where he's going, and he still blows it by him.
Yeah, and it's not like Wayne Gretzky, it's not like he had a hammer, man, but it's just like he put it exactly where he needed to. So that one is for Wayne Gretzky. Guy Lafleur, of course, was the one with the too many men against Boston, coming down the wing, scoring the goal. Bobby Orr flying through the air. Ovi, for me, is the one. I mean, it's against Phoenix, but where he's on his back like a turtle and puts it into the net. Like, that's the Ovi one. I don't know if you have any others for any sort of superstar players in the last few years.
No, it's funny as you go through it, Jared, because you kind of think of iconic moments. Like, and this is also kind of timing and relevance. If I said to you, what would be Steve Eiserman's biggest goal?
Overtime versus St. Louis.
And wasn't that John Casey
as well?
Yeah, and then they lost in the second round.
Yes.
It is. You know, and even when Sidney Crosby, if I said to you, like, does Sidney Crosby forget about the Olympics? Does he have an iconic goal in the playoffs? Like, I can't.
Probably scored against Ottawa.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Probably
not
iconic.
Yeah, but you know, it's hard to. Like the other, the obvious would be Dallas. Was Brett Hull credited with the goal? Or who was credited with the goal when they won?
Yes, the foot in the crease.
Yeah, and then the other one that is obviously is always Jason Arnott, right? I mean, those are the moments. I mean, to win Stanley Cups, to score a winning goal. Obviously, Stéphane Matteau.
But I'm talking superstars.
Oh, yeah,
I'm talking
iconic
players with iconic
goals
that they're always remembered.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of Sidney Crosby in Pittsburgh, on this day, 5 years ago today, May 17th, 2017, the Ottawa Senators were at home at Canadian Tire Center? Yeah, okay. Playing the Pittsburgh Penguins in Game 3 of the Eastern Conference Final. Ottawa had won Game 1 on a Bobby Ryan overtime goal. Pittsburgh bounced back and won Game 2. Ottawa was coming home now with home ice advantage. And despite the fact that they would win Game 3, many would say it was a moment during this game, during this Ottawa win, that may have turned the series in Pittsburgh's favor.
Sullivan says that's enough for Marc-Andre Fleury. 4 goals on 9 shots, including this wraparound opportunity for Zach Smith.
There you go. Zach Smith goal, 12:32 into the first period, gave the Sens a 4-0 lead over Pittsburgh in what eventually would be a 5-1 win to give Ottawa a 2-1 series lead. But it was Marc-Andre Fleury out and Matt Murray in. And from there, of course, we don't need to relitigate the history of the series. We all know what happened. But in your mind, was Matt Murray taking over? Like, let's say Ottawa wins the game, but they don't go. Let's say they win it 3-2, and Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't get lit up for four goals and 12 shots.
Yeah.
Does he play again in game four?
Yeah, absolutely.
Does the series change?
Well, I think it does, JR, and I think it's bold by Sullivan because there was thought that at that point, we're not just talking about, you know, I mean, I know Matt Murray had won it the previous year, but you've gone through two full series. He's played, and I remember everybody saying, no matter what happens in game three, Marc-Andre Fleury will be back. Nope, Sully said, forget it. Switch it out. That was huge. The other thing I recall is Craig Anderson let in a couple of real clunkers to start game four. One from a real weird angle, Pittsburgh player off a left side where it just felt like that was the turning point in the series right there. And also, Jaron, going through, and I don't know what to read into this. I was trying to think to myself, from an Ottawa perspective, that is the last playoff game, right, that they played, which was 5 years ago?
Well, last playoff series, yes.
Well, look, the game seven of that series. But their farm team has not played a playoff game since 2013-14. And those 2 years under Luke Richardson, they lost in the first round. And people
technically
are like,
they played a play-in series this
year.
Well,
and again, I've worked in the league that you're not in the playoffs. And my point is that, you know, they have not. That's 8 years at your farm team. We can say some COVID, because a couple of years ago, hey, they were not only poised to be in the playoffs, but to probably go deep. But, boy, that's been a long time without any playoff experience for lots of different reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, there you go. That was, believe it or not, 5 years ago today.
Yeah.
Maybe the turning point in that Sens-Pens series happened with Marc-Andre Fleury out and Matt Murray in. Okay, 9:54. Hammer, you're still searching for our winner, so we'll do that before the end of the show. We'll announce that. A couple of things we haven't got to today. The NBA draft lottery is tonight. Interesting because, of course, last week was the NHL draft lottery. In fact, I think it was a week ago today, right? Interesting how the NBA does it just slightly different. It's a weighted lottery. But as opposed to a percentage thing where last overall has a, you know, in the case of Montreal, was it 18.5% and then 14 and then 11 or whatever it ends up being. In the NBA, they actually make the bottom three teams all equal at 14% chance of winning. And then it kind of goes down from there. Just on the surface, as I say that to you. Do you like that idea, or do you like the way the NHL has done it, where it's weighted, but it's still weighted in terms of, you know, the worst teams by a slight margin?
Oh gosh, yeah, I guess I'm fine with the NHL one. What I don't want to see, and again, I don't even care if teams are throwing a season now. In the NBA and the NHL, and I'll just say the NHL, I know that teams don't want to be in the toilet forever. Now, Arizona, well, you could argue differently, but the baseball model differently. You know, the teams that finish last, like in Ottawa, you know, like we've seen with some great rebuilds, Toronto had a plan. Washington had a plan. Different teams like Tampa have had plans. Those teams need those picks. So, yeah, I'm fine with it. What about you?
I kind of, you know, and I've seen this one. If you're trying to get away from teams, you know, totally tanking, I don't mind the idea of sort of the bottom three all being equal. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. That goes tonight.
It's also funny when you think about recent drafts, and I'm not obviously an NBA expert, but the most hype pick in the last, it feels like a long time, was Zion Williamson, right? Mm-hmm. Where it was like that was going to be franchise altering, and poor fellow there has not made it, you know, it almost looks like you wonder where the hell his career is going.
Exactly. And one other, I wanted to raise this because it just kind of bugs me. I understand this just goes to show you how much, at the end of the day, money makes the world of sports go around. But Adam Schefter tweeted out last night on his podcast that Monday, starting next season, so 2023, not this coming season, but the season after, they're going to start flexing Monday night football games now. So traditionally, obviously, the Monday night game is the final game of the weekend, and it's on Monday night, as Monday night football would suggest, that starting with, for the final 5 weeks, I believe it is, of the regular season, because they, you know, ESPN is paying a pile of money. They obviously want a competitive game, and the schedule is laid out, but you never know how it's all going to turn out. And you can, if you end up with a dud game late in the season, that's not great if an organization is paying billions of dollars for the rights to broadcast your game. So the NFL has gone, you know what? Like Sunday night football, we're going to give you the right to flex in games to Monday night. So you could be a ticket buying visitor. Let's say your favorite team would be the Philadelphia Eagles, let's say. And let's say you make one sojourn down to Philadelphia for a scheduled 1 o'clock game on a Sunday late in the season. Let's say they're taking on the hated Dallas Cowboys in that game. And then all of a sudden, a week ahead of time, the NFL pulls the old bait and switch and says, you know what? Game's not at 1 o'clock on Sunday or even 4 o'clock. It's going to be Monday night at 8:30 now. Like, how? Again, they do it for television, and television pays the bills. Even more than butts in the seats.
Yeah.
And we've seen how much the NFL broadcasting rights go for. But boy, oh boy, this is gonna cause a you know what storm, because the NFL is filled with a lot of people who come from out of town for one game, and if you're gonna switch it by what essentially, like, think about it, if you buy tickets for a 1 o'clock Sunday game, you might fly out on Sunday night, right after the game is over. Now, not only are you not flying out Sunday night, you're not flying out Monday night because the game's on Monday night. You got to stay till Tuesday. You got to take 2 days off work. You got to totally rearrange your transportation if you're coming from out of town.
Hammer, can you have a pen and pad ready? I want you to add up how many trips JR has made to Philadelphia.
It was coming, though. As soon as they were getting competitive again, I was going.
You have never gone to Philadelphia.
I know.
And you're worried
but I plan
about,
to.
And here's the other, and I don't disagree. It is kind of fun. Was there not one real, like, clunker down the stretch, guys?
Every year.
Yeah, we kind of thought down the stretch. Because here's the other thing, and I don't know if it still holds true. It's a bit of prestige that you're in the Monday night football game. So I totally agree with what you're saying, JR, but there's also part of, man, this is cool that my team's playing on Monday night football. But I just think even logistically for stadiums and for everything that's going on in the city, it's a pretty big deal.
I don't get, but I do get flexing Sunday night games from Sunday afternoon. I get that to a certain extent. At least it's the same day.
Yeah.
We're talking about the potential of switching games to 36 hours later.
No, for sure. Yeah.
Like it's ridiculous. They won't change it. I understand. Money makes the world go around. It just cheeses me.
And the reason I would not get into trouble is that I have a rule of, now Philadelphia's been on the line, JR, but anything to do with New York, New England, or Buffalo, or anything in that, you know, sphere, I'm not traveling anywhere past the end of October based on the weather.
Yeah.
So I'm protected.
That's a good point.
No, because it's funny because the bill schedule came out and we were talking about maybe going down. And it's pretty quickly, with a couple of road games and a few other things. And another one being a Monday night game.
Yeah.
Like, you don't, I'd love to go to Buffalo for one of those beautiful, you know, fall Sundays. And there just aren't many options.
No. Anyway, wanted to get that off my chest.
Yeah.
Who's our winner?
Murray Sands.
Nice job, Murray. Murray correctly knew that the Ottawa Lynx won the 1995 Governor's Cup by defeating the Norfolk Tides. We don't drink. We don't smoke.
Was that the Mets farm team?
I think so. Good memory on that one.
No, I just used to go to Norfolk quite a bit, and that's what I recall. The stadium was right downtown.
Congratulations, Murray. You have scored yourself a pair of seats to see a little bit of Ottawa sports history as the Ottawa Titans baseball team will play their first ever game 1 week from tonight at the Ottawa Baseball Park. And Murray, you will be there. We'll have tickets to give away through the rest of the week.